Hello, welcome to Widnes Rugby Chat, episode 7, after our emergency edition last week with myself and Ian Chivot. I'm James Gordon. Just me this week, thought we'd have a bit of a quiet, reflective podcast this week just to discuss what's gone on. It's hard to believe, really, it's 2 weeks since the podcast with Luke Backhouse, and quite a lot's happened since then, so unless you've been living under a rock, you probably know already, but we saw James Rule confirm he'll be leaving his post as chief executive before the start of the season. Brian O'Connor the same. The club confirmed the signing of Chris Nininu. Then we had the Anthony Gellin saga, which ended in the club's favour. And then in the meantime, Steve O'Connor has issued a statement saying that they're happy to discuss handing over shares of the club to the right person. So, Widnes have been dominating the headlines for the past couple of weeks, which is always good. And to be fair, I think you've got to give the club a lot of credit for the way they've handled the Gellin situation. I'm as critical as anybody about the club. I think sometimes fairly, but I feel like I do give them credit where it's due, and certainly the way the Gellin situation's being handled in the end is, is certainly a credit to James Real and whoever else is involved in that process. I think maybe they were a little slow to react initially when he was named on the French Federation list, but, you know, presumably, I mean, the easiest thing for Widnes to have done, you know, could have been just to bend over and say, all right, well, we'll release Gellin from his contract and let him sort himself out, you know, save the money on the budget. But Widnes has stood firm. I believe Gellin rocked up at the stadium on Friday and obviously was in training over the weekend. So real massive boost, really, for Widnes. And we talked about the squad a few weeks ago and how Inu and Gellin, in my opinion, were pivotal, really, to where Widnes are going to be next season, and certainly the squad for me, I feel, is a lot more confident in the 17 that Widnes can put out now that those two have signed. You know, I think there's always space in any squad for a couple of new signings, and this Widnes squad at the moment's no different. A lot of us don't know how the youngsters are going to fare. Some of them, you know, we've seen considerable minutes last season and the season before, and, you know, in the case of Gilmore and Craven, obviously a long time in the first team. But some of the others, you're not quite sure at this moment in time what sort of level they're going to be at. And it's up to the coaching staff, and, you know, Phil Finney knows them better than anyone, to figure out who of those players is going to be able to step up in Championship next season. So if you look at where the club is compared to 2 weeks ago, certainly the squad and everything like that, much, much stronger place, much more positive sort of feeling around the club after that. I still see hearing people saying about signings, but I think there's a lot of people writing off the Widnes squad without having a real appreciation of what the other squads are like in the Championship. I've seen a lot of people say, oh, you know, Widnes mid-table, but have other people looked at the squads? I know I did a breakdown of the forward packs from the top sort of 6-7 teams, and Widnes' packs up there with any of them. And I think, you know, you look at Toronto are probably your elephant in the room sort of thing, because they've got the money to basically sign whoever they want. But certainly, if you look at the starting pack of Widnes, you know, if you say Chapelau, Hood, Tangata, Dean, Hansen and Kale, you know, there's none of the other clubs can really say, hand on heart, that they've got better than that. So, so hopefully the hysteria around the squad strength will die down a little bit now, now that Gellin and Inu have arrived. A few people have asked me if I heard anything about other players, and there's not really that much going on. I know Dom Speetman's name's been mentioned quite a few times. I'm not really too sure what the situation is with him. My understanding was he wanted a part-time deal somewhere. I know there's been a few murmurings about whether we may get involved with the strength and conditioning side. I think he's got a gym or a couple of gyms. I think Speetman's I like Speakman as a player. He's very busy, very active around the play of the ball. And he was at Dewsbury last season, and you know, he'd be a good option, I think. Charlie Goode's being mentioned sort of in dispatches, and I'm fairly sure that was being written off completely, but you don't know with the change in circumstance at the club over the past couple of weeks whether he may become available again. And then aside from that, someone asked me last night about Patrick Arvan, but as far as I'm aware, Patrick Arvan's moved to France, so I know it's not been announced anywhere, but he's certainly living in France at the moment. So if it was up to me, I'd probably have a go at bringing him back, but we'll see what happens with that one. A few corrections, if you like, so things that get discussed on here. So I know Ian, last week we talked about a few things with Ian, and a few people have reached out to us to provide some corrections to the facts. And I must thank Graham, Matt Whitley's agent, for coming to us with this one. So Widnes got received no compensation and no funds for Matt Whitley, which perhaps contradicted what our understanding of the situation was last week. And I think the sort of the confusion lay because Whitley was grouped in with all the players under 22, when in fact he is 22, and he's 23 before the start of the season. So I think that's where the confusion lay, because Whitley was tagged in with all the players under 22 who'd been offered deals. But yeah, unfortunately, from a witness point of view, no compensation for Whitley. I had this discussion with Graham via Twitter, and he's right. I think Widnes have got good service out of Matt Whitley, and I suppose it's always a shame to lose a good player and not be compensated for it, but you can't knock Whitley's impact. You know, he's probably the, if you look at all the players that have come through the Widnes Academy, he's probably been the most successful from a Widnes point of view in terms, you know, I know Myler and Mullally maybe to an extent have gone on to bigger and better things, but they only played a handful of games for Widnes, whereas Whitley's, you know, played quite a few. He's established himself at Widnes, and that's what's earned him the deal. There's also been some, and Graham also mentioned the Danny Walker situation. So I've obviously the club has received a fee for Danny, or some sort of fee for Danny Walker. I've had conflicting information from a few different parties. Obviously, being in Warrington, I hear things from Warrington, so I wouldn't like to speculate on what that fee is, but certainly based on the formula that we looked at, you're looking at maybe around 30,000. There was some speculation that there may be additional payments relating to maybe tapping him up at one point, but again, no real concrete on that one. And another thing is the central funding. So a lot of people are talking about central funding. I have asked the RFL about this, but they've not got back to me as yet. So as soon as I get that information, I'll try and share it with you. So the central funding, a lot of speculation. There's a lot of people saying Widnes are getting 700,000, which as far as I'm aware, is nowhere near what they are actually getting this season. That is, of course, based on what the funding was previously. So when obviously the qualifiers existed, Widnes, I think, would be classed as having finished third in the championship effectively last season, because they finished seventh in the qualifiers. So you're probably looking closer, even based on those figures, you're probably looking closer to 500,000, 600,000. But I'm trying to get clarification on whether the whole championship funding has been ripped up and it's all equal, or at least closer to equal than it was. There was a massive jump from, I think, the team that finished fifth got 500,000, and then anyone below fifth in the championship was getting around 250 or even less than that. So there's two more teams in championship as well. So if you group, I'd done a bit of maths, if you grouped all the funding and divided it by the 14, every club would be receiving around 260,000. Now, I don't expect every team to get the same, because I would imagine it will be weighted even in small steps based on where teams finished last season. So I think the more realistic assumption is that central funding from a Widnes point of view would be around the 300,000 mark. Now, obviously, you've got the parachute payment on top of that as well, but hopefully it will bring some clarification around those points in the next few weeks. And I guess for me, this sort of highlights a bit of a situation, not just with Widnes, but I think with sports clubs and clubs in general, about transparency. So, you know, I don't think fans are asking to know, you know, fans don't want to know every little detail that a club does, but I think there are certain issues where fans feel like they deserve to have at least some sort of knowledge on what, you know, what's happening. And I think, I certainly think funding, central funding is one. I don't see any reason why the RFL, for instance, couldn't publish who, what central funding everyone receives. Because I think it just shuts down any inaccuracies, any speculation, any assumption. You know, like, obviously we've just all assumed that the funding's remained the same, and based on what the funding's been in previous seasons, Widnes will probably be looking at more of the top end, but, you know, obviously that's not the case. So I'm hoping that if the RFL do furnish me with that information, that I can potentially run the piece that sort of irons this all out. But I think, like I say, it's a good example of an issue, I think, where I don't see any real reason why fans or it couldn't be released. You know, I know people talk about injuries and stuff all the time. You know, why doesn't the club disclose injuries? To an extent, I can sort of, I can empathise with the coach's situation. Well, I don't want them to know, I don't want the opposition to know who's available and who's not available. I can empathise with that situation as much as I can empathise with the fans wanting to know, you know, where player X is. So I just think the important thing, you know, ultimately the fans are what make the club, the clubs. You know, with no fans, you've got no club sort of thing. And that's a message that Widnes in particular are keen to hammer out on a regular basis. So I think, you know, why not try and shut down any inaccuracies as soon as possibly can? Because I think Widnes have probably got a lot of stick based on the assumption that funding would be a lot higher, you know, with regards to their recruitment. And I think it would have been very easy, I, in my opinion anyway, to shut all that down by revealing what the funding was. So, yeah, so that's an interesting issue that hopefully gets some more information next week. I've noticed a few things happening. There's a little bit of a... I wanted to talk a bit more about getting behind the club and the fans and stuff like that. And I've noticed there seems to be a little bit of a civil war among Widnes fans at the moment, which is a bit disappointing. You've almost got the... You've got the fans that are perceived to have been pushing for change. Now, I don't think there's a massive group of fans who've been pushing for change. I just think there's a massive group of fans who have been unhappy with how things have run, and that naturally means that you want to see a change. But then you've got the other, you've got a group of fans who are almost very defensive of everything that the club or certain individuals do, to the extent where you don't really understand what their motives are, what their position is. You know, ultimately the facts are Widnes are being relegated, fans are turning away in the droves or have been, and you've got to ask questions as to why that's happened. And I think ultimately we're all united as fans of the same rugby club, and that's all that matters. And it's been disappointing to see, you know, I think I've seen somebody say it's emotionally draining or something, seeing people complain about the club. And it's like, well, it's emotionally draining watching your team win 3 games in a season, you know. So from my point of view, I think, you know, completely understand everyone has different opinions, and that's perfectly fine. But I think having a go at someone for their opinion and you know, the other way, I think it's just a bit, it's got a bit strange, that situation now. So I think the message is now is that now you look at the team that Widnes have got. You know, over the years everyone's always said, oh well, let's give the kids a chance, let's bring through Widnes lads, let's get them in the first team. That's what's happened. You've got a new coach, you've got superstar signing in Gelling, you've retained in who's obviously a good player. And now it's a bit like, why, you know, the fans have presumed this majority group that people are calling that wanted rid of either Dennis Betts or James Rule or whatever have now sort of got to that point. The excuses, that's it now. There's no more excuses. If you're not behind Widnes Vikings now, then you're not a supporter of the club, because you're now in a position where it's all there. You know, the rugby team's there. You know, regardless of what happens with the ownership, I think I don't think Steve O'Connor... I personally wouldn't have any issues if Steve O'Connor carried on with the his ownership of the club, running a tight ship and running a relatively sustainable club. You don't need... But at the same time, I wouldn't be... You know, I wouldn't mind if Luke Backhouse came in with a load of money, but I think fans have got to alter their expectation. The reality is that even if someone comes in with millions and millions of pounds, it doesn't necessarily guarantee success. We see that at Salford, we see that at Lee. You know, it doesn't guarantee success. What's going to guarantee success is fans getting behind the club and also building... I mean, and like I say, I'm not blaming the fans at all, because I think the club have got to harbour the responsibility for how they've disconnected with the fans. I completely think that they've... You know, the way that they've engaged with the fans has been pretty poor of you, and that's why they've got a massive drop-off now. But ultimately, the only way Widnes is going to succeed now is if the fans get behind. And I'm hoping that the changes that have happened will enable the fans to grow a bit closer to the club. You look at the Gelling thing. The Gelling situation over the past week or whatever has probably done more marketing for Widnes than, or more success, has been more successful in terms of marketing for Widnes than we've seen in anything, you know, over the years. And that's almost something you can't buy, a player like that. You know, again, you have to give credit to the club for signing. You know, he's exactly the sort of player I think Widnes need to try and drum up the town, get a bit of interest. It'd be great to see him around the town. Just like it would be great to see Kieran Pirtle and other players around the town. And, you know, if a new chief executive's appointed, or whoever's going to be general manager, or that sort of figure, the size of Widnes, and, you know, much like places like Casford, you need to be down at the level with the fans in terms of you've got to be in and around the community. So all right, banging on about all the community work you're doing, but is that really engaging with the genuine community? Is that really getting people through the turnstile? So yeah, I mean, I believe there was quite a few sign-ups at the back end of last week, coincided with you know, payday and the end of the early bird offer, and then of course Inu and Gelling confirmed over the weekend will no doubt give another boost to that. Hopefully people will carry on getting behind the club until the start of the season, and you know, we can start the season and be focusing on the rugby and hopefully winning a few games. And I know Anthony Gelling alluded to that in his piece, that, you know, once we start winning a few games, build momentum, maybe people will start being a bit more positive. I mean, ultimately, rugby's what puts Widnes on the map, and I hope I don't offend anyone by saying that, but rugby puts Widnes on the map, and I think both Widnes and the council, to be fair, need to acknowledge the fact that, you know what, we're in a privileged position that a small town like ours can put up a professional sports team that can potentially be successful. We all have our own stories as to why we support and follow Widnes. Mine is, I mean, I'm a Warrington lad, which most people probably know anyway, but my dad and all his family are from Widnes, so my dad took me to watch Widnes. Yeah, thanks for that, Dad. So I think there's obviously a split in the Widnes fans between people of my generation and below and people over my generation. So I'm 30 years old, so I don't remember any of the good times, even though the World Cup Challenge was in my lifetime, but I was 1 year old. So all my rugby related memories are very unspectacular, as opposed to anyone over 30. You can remember going to Wembley, World Cup, winning the league, the best players, you know, World Cup Challenge. So I think, and that may contribute to the divide. I think there's a lot of sympathetic fans, but it's easy to be sympathetic when you've got all these good memories and history to draw back on, whereas anyone 30 and under basically hasn't got any of that. I mean, a good memory for me is, you know, is the last minute win at Batley in 2008. You know, obviously we've had the couple of Northern Rail Cup finals, one of which I wasn't at, so I was on holiday, but that's literally it. You know, for me, the only real barometer of success is getting into Super League, and of course we did that once in 2001 to get promoted, and then to get back in 2012, it was just done off the field. So there was no real fan, you know, there wasn't a, you know, obviously you had the day where it got announced, which was fine, but there was no like exciting, we've won promotion, we've won a grand final, we've got promoted thing for us to enjoy. Instead, all we've had to suffer really, you know, you had two grand final defeats, you had the administration, relegation twice now. you know, the Challenge Cup semi-final against Castleford. So I think everyone gets caught up a little bit in the history of the club, which is great. You know, I think, you know, history's so important, but I think the longer ago that becomes, the higher percentage of your fan base are actually just all they've experienced is all the things I've just described. So, you know, I'd love to hear some of your stories as well of how you got into sporting Widnes. Obviously, a lot of people, hometown team and stuff like that. Because like I said before, ultimately what unites us is the fact that we support Widnes. So, so yeah, a little somber episode this week. Hopefully I'll get some more guests. I've got some speaking to many people about coming on as a guest on the show in the coming weeks, as certainly as we build up closer to the season as well. Potentially looking at maybe holding a fans panel type show as well. If anyone would be interested in that, do let me know. Might get three or four fans in and have a little bit of a discussion between us all. As always, please do subscribe to the YouTube channel, share this on Facebook, retweet on Twitter, like it, do whatever you can to get it out there. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you next week.